Welcome everyone to a special bonus edition of the Highly Relevant Podcast, where I'm going to dedicate the entirety of the show to Avengers Endgame. And we're calling it After the Endgame. Filming culture critic Mike Sargent joins me to go through the most pressing questions you might have after you saw the film. We got a lot of people emailing me, you know, tweeting me, letting me know why we didn't put out an Avengers non-spoiler or spoiler-free review last week. Well, because we were waiting for this one. I actually happen to think that it's more relevant to talk about what happens after you see that film than setting you up to watch the film this week or whatever. If you didn't catch it beforehand, don't listen to this podcast, please, because the very purpose of this episode is not to prepare you to see the film. We already did that on Instagram Live last Tuesday. Mike and I came out of the press screenings. It was the first screenings. And we talked about this for about 30 minutes, setting you up for that. That's not what we want to do here. We want to discuss the subsequent questions and future of the franchise and your place in it. All right, Mike, how are you, man?
I'm okay.
All right. So you left the theater after watching Avengers Endgame, and the world seems different. You just became aware you have spent 11 years watching Marvel films, and now it's permanently intertwined in your life. Kind of like the way Star Wars was for Gen Xers. Now what? We have three breakdowns here. We're going to do an overview of the impact, the cultural impact, and the current impact that Avengers Endgame is having. We're also going to do questions on the future. Like, now what happens? Where does Marvel go from here? And then we're going to answer, or at least try and answer, a lot of these spoiler questions that many have, like Loki, Black Widow, Anthony Mackie, et cetera, et cetera. So let's begin with an overview, Mike. I ask you the first question. $1.2 billion globally this weekend. Why do you think Avengers Endgame had the cultural impact that none of the movies before it had?
Well, I don't think there isn't a simple answer. I think it's a series of answers. I think that, first of all, this is significant, and just to contextualize it for me, it's a significant shift in what we're able to do. You know, technology has allowed us at this point, anything that anybody can think of can be committed to film. So that's one. So the technology and the tools for storytelling have evolved so we can tell different kinds of stories that we never could. Two, I think the huge ambition of this that's so unique is the idea of having 22 different films, multiple different characters, 5 or 6 different specific characters, just like the comic books were, that are all interconnected. So an interconnected universe means that you may like one thing, you might not like that one so much, but you're aware of all of these aspects of the universe. As a matter of fact, you're more aware of the Marvel universe sometimes, I think, than reality. You know, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think that that's thing. And I think that's important because that's skin in the game. You know, everybody came into this movie having some feeling of how they feel about who's their favorite character, what their favorite film is from that character, whether they liked Infinity War, didn't like, or they're disappointed in this film, that film. Everybody had skin in the game, and you cared about these characters. This is a level of investment that has that has previously never been seen before, no matter what the franchise. That's my opinion.
$350 million when $257 million for Infinity War was the record. We're talking about obliterating the box office with almost $100 million extra dollars that the box office could not withstand before. It just didn't have the capacity of expansion. And if you thought that the expansion could be, I don't know, maybe 10, 20 million, but 100 million almost, Mike? What does that say about audiences' taste about this particular film? And it just really seems like the whole world went to see this.
Well, you know, the thing is that the whole world did go to see this. And that you bring up some interesting thing. You know, it's not just that it made $350 million here. You know, and it made like $859 million and so a global of $1.2 billion, all that. But it broke like 8 number one records. It was the biggest Thursday, the biggest single day Friday, biggest Saturday, biggest Sunday, biggest China. It fastest film to 1 billion globally. It broke all these records. But like you said, it's because everybody, you know, you and I went back and forth, like, should this be spoiler free? Should it be spoiler laden? And you were like, well, you know, 1.2 billion, a lot of people saw this movie.
So what does this ultimately say about the audience's taste for this particular film? Why did they go out in record numbers to see this film? What is it about the Avengers Endgame that it possessed that no other movie in the history outside of maybe Avatar has?
Well, I think it's a couple factors. I think, okay, one, you got this level of investment. Two, you've had 10 years to build to this. So it's not like this movie just came out like Avatar did out of the blue. You don't know any of these characters. And, you know, Avatar is still an amazing thing because it wasn't based on anything. This, you've got characters that have been long established. They're part of culture. You know, so everybody, even if you never read a Spider-Man comic book or saw a Spider-Man movie, you still know who he is. So all of that being said, so there's a level of awareness that's never been for anything before. But then on the top of it, the last film was a complete cliffhanger. Okay.
Right.
And the idea, it really, like you said, it hasn't been since like Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, where there was such a cliffhanger, like, okay, Han Solo's frozen. What's going to happen? You got to wait 3 years, you know? So
right.
I think that that's, it is a phenomena. I think that we're
witnessing.
That's
the only way to describe it.
It is.
A phenomena.
It definitely is. Whether you like the movie or not, this is history. This is historical in storytelling.
Right. And I think that one of the beautiful things about a movie like this is about the communal experience, something that Netflix is trying to disrupt.
Absolutely.
And it's incredible that there's still these sort of like, you know, established iconic event institutions like the Super Bowl where everybody gets together to watch it, or Game of Thrones where everybody's getting together to watch it, Avengers Endgame, everybody's getting together to watch it. And honestly, I think in a world where we're so focused on individualism, at least I know here in New York City, where I live, this is a city that is really about the individual, the single entity, and how everyone else can help your agenda. That's kind of like the world we live in. And it sucks because humans were made to be in a pack. We're made to be in a tribe, share their sad moments, share their anger, share their happy moments. And I think Avengers Endgame touches on a primal instinct of all of us to be together in a like-minded place where you can see transgender, gay, Black, Asian, Indian, Latino, young, old, female, male in one single room. What things can bring people together like that? And I think that that's the praise that I have for these types of movies, that it's not just a film. It's something deeper, much more profound. It's a much more human, intimate experience that I feel that I went through this, because Star Wars also does the same exact thing, but this one really felt like a high fever pitch.
Well, you know, I have to say, I agree with everything you said 1,000%. And I'll add to it to say that, you know, there's a famous screenwriting guru named Sid Fields, and he says that he compares movie going to conscious dreaming, like we're all having the same dream at the same time. And I think, you know, the term event filmmaking, this is an event film, but you know, let's look at what event means. You know, if you go to wrestling or a mixed martial arts, you know, it's an event. You could watch it on TV, and we do live in a society, like you said, that encourages us to kind of, you know, be facing the phone, hunched down, headphones on, block out the world. You know, we do live in that individualistic, like, you live in your bubble, I'll live in mine. But at the same time, you know, I know you and I both have lamented being a film critic. In some ways, we don't get that same communal experience that we don't get to see the movie with the intended audience. And every now and then I do. And I have to say, I remember it's fantastic.
How much fun it is, right?
It's fantastic. It's part of, if you look back at when you fell in love with a movie, it was an emotional experience. And you said something very important there, you know. And one thing I think the Russo brothers understand, and when you see Endgame with an audience, and if you've already seen it, then we're talking about it, everybody laughed at the same. Everybody gasped at certain things. It's like when yep. Captain America has his Rocky moment, the audience cheered, and you feel that. And that's part of the excitement. Sure, you could clap at home.
In your living room with the curtains
closed. There's nothing like looking around, seeing a crowd of strangers having the same reaction you do to something.
Oh, dude, it's almost like going to church where you kind of get into a place where you're with a bunch of sitting down next to a bunch of strangers and the priest says, shake the hand of your fellow friend. And without even knowing them, you shake them or you hug them because you're doing something that is higher than you
You're connecting. I agree with you. And
you're connecting. And I feel that that happened to me at Star Wars. I think I hugged somebody I didn't even know that was in a line because I was so pumped up.
Right. Exactly. And that shared experience, like you said, I think is part of the appeal because again, here's the other side of it. The other side of it is fandom has become another thing. You know, you always read the interviews. Oh, it's the fans. Well, it is the fans. So, and if we are the fans, it's like they're creating the content for us to consume because we are rabidly consuming conventions. When I was a kid, comic book conventions are like the weirdos go. Okay.
Right. Now, the freaks.
Now, you know, getting dressed up has a name. It's called cosplay. It's
play.
And people, you know, want to take a picture with somebody who spent all that time to do it. Now, that's a certain level of engagement.
Well, it's also for the other fan. Yep. It's seeing your character in real life right next to you.
And you're seeing somebody who's as ape shit over the shit as you are. And you're connecting. It's like
absolutely.
If your favorite character is whoever and you see somebody dressed up as whoever, you're like, oh, Black Panther, Wolverine, come over here.
So I think that the main headline coming out of this 1.2 billion global weekend at the box office for Avengers Endgame is, can it beat Avatar? Avatar, so for those of you that might not know, is the number one highest grossing film in the history of cinema in the last 120 years or so. And what we're looking at here is that it made $2.7 billion. And there's a possibility that in the second week for Avengers Endgame, it could reach the incredible $2 billion mark. But I think one of the questions you and I had talked to off mic, Mike, was that what will the dip be for Avengers in its second weekend? Let's just hypothetically say it's 60%. So from 350, it could go all the way down to $150 million off to $200 million. Second week for $200 million is incredible. And that's not including openings in different markets that haven't opened just yet. I heard that Russia just opened a few days ago or something like that. We're really talking about that there is a possibility that this movie can be the highest grossing. Do you think it'll be in second place or has Avatar met its match?
I think Avatar's met its match, but not so much. And take nothing away from Avatar. You know, 10 years ago, whatever it was when Avatar came out, there were X amount of screens and X amount of markets. The market has matured. There are a lot more screens out there now. There are a lot more movie theaters. And areas that were just developing have completely developed. And the technology has changed. Digital projection makes things very different in terms of the cost. Not the initial investment, but getting a movie. This, you know, it used to be prints and advertising used to be part of the budget for a film. You can get rid of the print part because everything can just be transferred electronically somewhere. So there's a huge amount of money that now can be saved and spent on marketing. So a movie like this, you know, success begets success. It's already breaking records, so it's got momentum now. And now forget all the people we were talking about. The main hardcore people, all those people are going to go see this again. Because for me now, if I go see this movie again, I'm going to see it not only for myself, but also to feel the audience enjoying it too. You know, that, and watch them get surprised like I got surprised.
And also to kind of like just connect deeper dots.
Yes.
That you missed and that through discussion you're now aware of. So you're going back to see it. Well, this was the secret behind Titanic. I remember going to Titanic, and I had asked, there were a bunch of girls that were screaming at Leo DiCaprio, and I was like, why are you screaming? He's like, I can't get enough out of him. This is my third time watching him.
Exactly, exactly.
And that was that repeat business that made Titanic and Avatar and now Endgame.
All of them, all of them. That level. Listen, people, like, I had a friend, like, when the first Star Wars movie came out, the new ones, I saw it as a critic, but I bought tickets. Okay, I'm revealing my true level of geekness here. I bought tickets to see it like that whole weekend. I saw it like twice that day, and then like the following Saturday morning, you know, with various friends at different theaters around the city. Okay, and I don't do that anymore now. I'm maturer now. But I know people who do. I know people who did that for Avengers, who bought tickets to see it two or three times in the same weekend with different sets of friends. So that, right, that happens. And why not? Like, yeah, you can't go Friday. Well, I'm going Friday, but I'll see what you on Saturday.
You know, speaking of the impact and friendships, you know, a lot of friendships have been severed because of this particular film. Interestingly, though, there was a tweet that was sent out by young actor, child actor Jacob Tremblay, that I retweeted, where he said that a lot of kids, and this is part of the impact, the negative impact of the film and why people are so sensitive to this particular film. Because, I mean, not for nothing, I think if you spoil The Curse of La Llorona for people, I think people would really not care. But if you are spoiling Endgame, which is what seems to be happening in schools across the country, where young kids are going to their junior high or elementary school or whatever it may be, even high school, and they're going in shouting in the hallways who died in the film, really kind of killing the expectations that you've been holding for 10 some odd years to see who will die and who won't. And he said that parents should kind of like, he said that parents should really look at this because it's a form of bullying. And I thought that was really interesting. And I retweeted it by saying, you know, Jacob Tremblay for president. And there was that one man who died, I think it was in China, because he was also doing the same thing.
He didn't die, but they beat the crap out of him. And I said, I say, bravo, bravo, beat that sucker, bravo.
So obviously, this hits a nerve when you talk about spoilers before the movie even screened. And that really is the power. All right, moving on.
Wait. But I do want to say, you know, you say, just to comment on that, to say, unfortunately, no matter what it is, there's human nature that, you know, they call it bullying. It always has been. There's always that kid who revels in telling you there's no Santa Claus.
Right.
Who wants to spoil your fun, and that's how they get fun, and that's sadistic.
God, seems like 1,000 years ago. I fought my way out of that cave, became Iron Man.
Let's talk about the career of Robert Downey Jr. For those of you that have already seen it, obviously, I already said this, we're talk spoilers because it's important to the overall discussion of what we're having in this particular podcast. Robert Downey Jr., the actor who does Tony Stark, dies in the film. And this was a singular moment, man, because there was allusions to it in Infinity War, and he always seemed to kind of save himself. I really thought he died in Infinity War, and I thought it was a great fight with Thanos. I thought that dying at the hand of Thanos, probably the most powerful being in the universe, it's not a bad way to go. But in this particular case, he did, and then it really makes you think, can anyone ever replace Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man?
Well, you know, here's the thing.
Or is Iron Man dead as a character moving forward in this universe?
Well, he's dead as Robert
Tony Stark
playing him. Yeah, there will be other Iron Mans, and there were other Iron Mans in the comics. And I mean, that's the thing about all the comics, you know, they're really kind of following what was done in the comics. And if you stop now, if we stop and we look at these last 22 films, that's, let's say, like early issues of Captain America and early issues of Iron Man and early issues of our various heroes. Like, those issues will always be there. You can reread them, you know. But as time goes on, they have to create new mythos, a new Thor, a new Captain America, a new... So I think, you know, all these actors are going to age out anyway. And if you build it into, as opposed to, okay, Roger Moore got too old, we got to replace him with Pierce Brosnan. Okay, he got too old, we got to replace him. Okay, now, you know, as opposed to, you know, rebooting these franchises when an actor ages out to plan it for these actors' careers and the reality of the universe to parallel, you know, like 10 years have gone by in the lives of these characters too. I think that makes more sense.
But Mike, don't you think, like, I feel, and this is just my personal opinion, I feel like I'm not ready to let go of these core characters yet.
Listen, I agree with you, but I think that this is, it's like Seinfeld. You know, he could have gone for a 10th season, but he went out while he's on top, and that's the best way to go.
Okay, all right.
Leave him wanting more.
Do you think that because of these particular deaths that almost feel like personal deaths, like friends have died?
Yes.
Do you think that we've reached the apex of the superhero film genre, or you think there's a lot left to go? Like, I just don't see how any other superhero film can beat 1.2 billion worldwide at the box office.
Well, I'm going to respond to that in a devil's advocate way. Okay. If you had asked, I mean, okay, when Star Trek, The Next Generation came out, people were up in arms. How can you make a new Star Trek? There's no way it could be as good as the original. You know, six series later, you know, now they're rebooting it and going back and having other actors. Nobody can play these characters. Other people have played them. You know, Star Wars, the new ones are going to come out. They're terrible. Everybody who saw the originals hated them. They made more money than the originals did. You know, I think what happens is, our generation, the generation that grew up, the generation that this is the most important to, these actors and their heroes are the most important to, you know, because I know we're going to talk about the future, but I think this means this much to us. And at this time, this is it. But down the line, there'll be more.
Interesting you say that, because now that I'm thinking about it, I might actually agree with you. When Iron Man came out, I always thought Iron Man was a B character in the Marvel comics.
He was totally a B character.
Yeah, and I never really saw him as bigger than Spider-Man or anything like that. And, I, you know, kudos, and this is where Robert Downey Jr. gets a lot of props. He took a B character, made him into an A-list star. And now you're somebody that you kind of didn't really care about in terms of a character. Now you, it hurts to see him go and to kind of see other people. Like, you know, no issues and no beef against Don Cheadle, but he's no Robert Downey Jr., my man. And Gwyneth Paltrow shows up as a female Iron Man towards the last portions of Avengers Endgame. And even though I thought that was cool, I actually thought that a female Iron Man was actually cooler than the Don Cheadle Iron Man, where I felt that he didn't really bring much to it. I always felt he was like a sidekick. Like, he was never truly used properly. It was almost like, I don't know, man. I just felt like Don Cheadle's Iron Man was really irrelevant to me. I felt like Gwyneth Paltrow's Iron Man or Iron Woman had much more impact in her moment as Iron Woman.
Well, maybe that says a lot about you, Jack, in terms of...
Well, I think what I'm trying to say here is that maybe, and now this is kind of where we probably segue into the questions about the future of the superhero genre and of the Avengers franchise. Let's talk about casting for a second. Can we see, and is the future an all-female Avengers? And the reason I say that is because, Mike, you and I were in the same theater watching... but we saw it on the same day, where you saw there was a moment towards the end where the Russo brothers assembled most of the female superheroes in one scene. And that was already a hint of what we could see in the future. Are we headed towards that?
Well, all right. First of all, I think absolutely. And let me just backtrack to make a quick comment on, you said Rob Downey Jr. It wasn't just Rob Downey Jr., you know, and Iron Man, you know, if you get historical there, Iron Man was one of the few characters they had not licensed out already. So, you know, it was like a lucky accident. So Marvel had to kind of use what they hadn't licensed to all the other places. But, you know, Jon Favreau really had a vision for this, and he really fought for Robert Downey Jr. because I don't think they really wanted him. So
No.
So I think it was the combination, you know, kind of things converge. You know, how do you get capture lightning in a bottle? And I think lightning in a bottle, you know, pardon, you know, the pun here for all of that, but that was really what happened with Iron Man. But that being said, I think, yes, I think that, you know, the one thing you start to see after 22 films, the movies that made the most money were Black Panther and Captain Marvel. You know, with the exception of the Avengers movies, where everybody's in there. And the Avengers movies.
Well, we also, let's talk about Wonder Woman, you know.
Well, that's my point. I was just going to get that. I was going to say, what that says is, okay, we've done the whole white male protagonist. We've done it. It's been done. It's been done to death. It's been done for decades and decades and decades. And now that you've given people a taste of something other than hamburger, they might say, wow, I want some more of that pork. I thought pork was bad for you, you know? And it's like, so people are more open to saying, and then if they have that pork, you're like, oh, wow, okay. Oh, Pernil? Oh, you could do this. You know, you could do all these different things that you never knew. So I think the world, okay, that's the significant part about global box office. It's not right. Just American tastes that matter. It's the taste of the world. Is the world ready to see a diverse set? Of course they are, because the world is diverse. The world wants to see itself. And the beauty, the one of the greatest joys of any movie, and you talk about connection. What are you really connecting on as when you love superhero or science fiction or fantasy movies? It's like, okay, whatever your reality is, we both prefer this reality. Mm-hmm, so this is a reality we all enjoy. We have that in common. And that's a meeting of the minds, and it's a meeting of the hearts. It's a meeting of the spirit. It's all those communal things. But then again, the diversity, like I can't tell you how many white guys I have met who are big comic fans, who are big movie fans, big Marvel fans. And I say, so what do you think of the best? What's the best Marvel movie? They say Black Panther. Now, it's not because they're in love with black people, but because Black Panther did some things, said some things, had more to say than any other Marvel movie, period, hands down. Hands down. And whether you love the movie or not, it still is more socially relevant than any of those films just because of the concepts it suggests. And it's only the tip of the iceberg.
No, it's absolutely right. And I think it's also evident in the box office numbers. I mean, look.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, Black Panther, Wonder Woman was seen by the dominant culture more than it was by the minorities. Right.
And it disproved the idea that people, you know, if you felt that white people dominate the planet, let's say, if you thought there are more white people on the planet than anything, and it's not true, but if they may be dominating the who what is being made and the distribution of all of that, but now there's just as much money or more can be made with diversity, and that's
absolutely
the future.
Let me throw a couple of numbers at you. Well, Black Panther did about $1.2 billion at the box office overall. Captain Marvel did $1.1 billion. I feel like it just kind of came out. And then Wonder Woman did about $821 million at the box office, you know, globally. So we're talking about numbers that are in the periphery of $1 billion that white people went to go see, men saw, female movies.
Absolutely.
Yes, there was a particular backlash about it.
Whatever.
But the numbers don't lie.
Absolutely.
People like women and African Americans, and hopefully we can see a lot more. And I think that the future of the casting of superheroes really can be kind of pointed to in a single scene to what Shazam did with DC. Towards the end of Shazam, 5 to 6, maybe even 7 characters came out. And when you looked at the superhero characters that assembled at the end of Shazam, they were Latino, they were Asian, they were African-American, there were women, and they were young. And that really, that snapshot of that diversity, when I looked at it, I went, this doesn't look weird at all. If anything, it feels exciting to see faces that I had stereotyped in different categories involuntarily in a whole different light. And now I can totally see Marvel or DC creating the first Asian American superhero. I can see the first Latin American superhero. I can see all that. And I think that's going to be the future of the new Avengers whenever we see it in 2025 or something.
Well, I think it's already the future. I think the lineup, we already kind of, you know, if you follow the comics, you already have some inklings of what the new Avengers lineup is.
What was the last time you read a comic, Mike?
Oh.
Because I don't follow comics anymore.
No, I don't follow comics anymore. Every now and then.
I don't know what's going on in the comic universe anymore.
Well, I read up on it a bit. But I'll just say that I think the future, not only is it diversity, but it's being able to, in some ways, tell the same story, you know, because if we get into like, oh, everything's the same story. Tell the same story, but from a different perspective. And that's what makes it interesting. If you saw the movie Little, I don't know if you saw the movie Little.
Yeah, I did.
All right. What makes that movie work? We've seen this done with the man, with a woman. But what really makes that movie work is the perspective. We've never seen it from that perspective. So it gives a whole new, it puts a fresh face on a type of story that can talk about certain things. So now we can have a different conversation. In a format we understand and embrace. There's certain kinds of movies that are always going to get made, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. I actually do think that we might be able to see an all-female version of the Avengers.
Absolutely.
Obviously, Endgame hinted at it. There's a comic that came out in 2015 called A-Force.
Yes. DC's already doing it, you know, with the they've got the all-female hero thing coming out.
Yeah, and I don't see a problem with that. If anything, I think it's going to be really cool to watch, and I would love to support that. Moving on, I wanted to ask you about the future of Marvel and Disney as a global entertainment juggernaut. They made a couple of mistakes with Star Wars, obviously with the Han Solo movies and these sort of like spin-offs, Rogue, et cetera, et cetera. Will they screw up Avengers moving forward, man? And what is Disney and Marvel's role in this? Is it because nothing can last this positively forever. And at some point DC has to take over.
I disagree. Here's what I think. I think a couple things on that. I think first of all, Disney is in a position to make mistakes. They can make a mistake, but they'll learn from their mistakes. They're smart enough to learn from their mistakes. And sometimes...
And you don't think Warner Media can learn from their mistakes?
Well, I think it's taken them longer. Like, how long did it take them to get to Shazam after we had to sit through a whole bunch of stuff? But no.
Right.
I think that now that... And you mentioned Avatar. Oh, can Avatar beat... Well, no matter whether Avatar beats it or not, it doesn't matter. It's still Disney. So the point being that, you know, if you look at the top 20 films that have made the most money, you know, 85% of them are Disney. Or Disney owned at this point. So if Disney owns Avatar and Disney owns, all, you know, everything in the Marvel Universe, and Disney owns Star Wars, and Disney owns like another 15 franchises, here's what I think the future is. The future is interconnected universes, because what we've seen that Marvel has set the template for is an interconnected universe. Ultimately, if you allow it to, and you're patient and you build it, if you build it, they will come.
They will come.
And they have. And I think that's what it is. I mean, Aliens versus Predator was tip of the iceberg of an interconnected universe. But now that it's all owned by the same company, look at the possibilities.
Oh, every company's trying to find their own cinematic universe. I think Universal was trying to do that with The Mummy, Werewolf, Dracula, Frankenstein.
They tried.
It just doesn't necessarily work.
They tried.
But there is... So now we begin Phase 4. Phase 4 begins in 2020 on May 1st. A lot of people are saying that the Avengers Endgame... I think the Russo brothers actually said this, that the Avengers Endgame is not the final film of Phase 4, that it's Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yes, it is.
That is when we truly will see the end of the story. And then on May 1st, 2020, we begin with an untitled Marvel movie. There's been talk about, you know, Black Widow having her movie, but we'll talk about those spoilers in just a few seconds. But before we leave the future questions that are lingering after you see this film, is a lot of people are now curious and going, well, Disney just bought out Fox, which means they just bought out the X-Men franchise, and they bought out what's the other one? The Fantastic Four franchise. So... will we see X-Men and Fantastic Four be interweaved into the core fabric of the Marvel Universe?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way.
And will it work?
I think, again...
Because we're talking... There's too many characters. That last battle scene, man, was mind-boggling.
Yeah,
I don't know if it can fit that much more.
Well, it had to build to that. You couldn't have come out with a movie like this in the first, even the first Avengers couldn't have been this intense. You had to give, people had to be invested to care in all of those characters to want to sit through 3 hours of you know, ups and downs and peaks and valleys and you know, to get to the last 45 minutes, that's battle. I mean, you really have to care. And that's what I think the Russo brothers did. And that's what was actually smart on Marvel and Kevin Feige's part to get people who are more about characters than effects to make these movies. And that's really been the secret sauce.
Got it. So you think X-Men and Fantastic Four will make it into 2020 and beyond for Phase 4?
Well, I don't know that it will necessarily be X-Men. I think it might be any of the other mutants, the new mutants, the next gen. There's all these other... There's a huge universe of characters out there. And stuff that we grew up on that is iconic for us may not be as iconic for people who were collecting comics in the 90s.
Right, and I think... the same way that Marvel built up B characters, C characters to become A and B characters.
Absolutely.
I do think that you might be right. I think we might be looking at a new generation of Fantastic Four members, a new generation of X-Men members, and then build them up in their own standalone sort of universes to then interconnect. But I think that those choices are going to be much more sort of filtered through the lens of women and minorities and inclusion, where we can like look at scenes like in Black Panther in the opening scene where they were in the projects, kids were playing basketball, and that kind of really told you about the lifestyle that is really never seen through a Marvel screen. And so I think we're going to be a lot more realistic. Like if I had to do my predictions, I think Marvel movies are going to be a little bit more grittier.
Well, I think
slightly grittier.
That's interesting. Well, I think it's going to depend on the film and depend on the character. I think it's going to be more diverse and maybe.
And by being more diverse, Mike, we have to tell the stories of diversity through the superhero lens. Like, you know, what the movie didn't tell, and I think this is really important, you know, Black Panther didn't come out of the projects. Black Panther didn't come out of poverty. Black Panther didn't come out of the struggles and the strife that regular folk go through in America. He was already a prince by the time he was born to a king that was isolated from the world. He had everything he wanted. So the Black struggle was not really shown in Black Panther. It was shown in a different dimension. So it was Wakanda and then was Earth.
Well,
and that's how you saw it. So I happen to think that Marvel is going to get more diverse writers. Like Ryan Coogler is not going to be the only Black film director. There's going to be hopefully a diverse group of people with different worldviews on how a superhero can change the world. And I think we're going to be seeing those stories told in a much more grittier place. Like it's not easy to grow up in a childhood and then all of a sudden find out you have superpowers. What if Spider-Man was Black from the very get-go living in Queens? He'd be probably living in Jamaica, my man. And going through the struggles that everybody goes through in Jamaica. I mean, I went through struggles in Jackson Heights. Imagine if somebody came out of Jackson Heights to become a major superhero. I don't know if it would be the same Peter Parker story.
Well, it definitely would be a different story, and I agree with you. I think I would have to say I agree. I think they'll be grittier. I think they'll be a little more reality-based.
Yes, more realistic.
More realistic. And I think also that you know, if you look at the characters that, you know, you ask what's Marvel going to do in Phase 4, you know, a character like Shang-Chi, a lot of people don't even know who Shang-Chi is, but that's an Asian character, you know, mm-hmm. and they're having an Asian writer, an Asian director, you know, they're doing the Eternals, and the Eternals are completely diverse. They've got, you know, the stuff that I think they might have done earlier on, like a Doctor Doom movie now is kind of maybe not going to happen. These are the future. I think if they are going to do a movie and we, you know, I don't know if the Black Widow was a fake out or they're really.
Well, yeah, you know, actually we should talk about that. But just before we do, I think the template for the future of Marvel films is going to be much more closer to Eric Killmonger, Michael B. Jordan's character in Black Panther, where he did come out of poverty and he did come out of the struggle. And he had a chip on his shoulder. He had anger in him. He had vengeance in his mind. Because you have the Black Prince and then you have this guy that basically came out of dirt to kind of become someone. And that was the anger that fueled him. And so anger actually ended up beating Black Panther the first go around in their first fight. So when you start kind of doing the backstory on characters like Eric Killmonger, I think either DC or Marvel should start using templates like this because they're much more relatable. They're much relatable to the news headlines. They're much more relatable to societal problems. They're much more relatable to mass moviegoers. And so I think that that's a key secret there, man.
That's interesting. I would halfway agree with that. I would say that, you know, looking at the characters they want to do, some of these will, you know, like any good science fiction, it won't be so much based in reality, but it'll be a fantasy that's talking about reality. So I think there's going to be some of that too. I mean,
what is this fake out you're talking about with Black Widow?
Well, here's the thing. Black Widow dies. So how can they be making a Black Widow movie?
Okay,
now,
so
if the fake out would be they announce a Black Widow movie, so nobody realizes going in she's going to die.
Interesting. So there's two theories that I read about. The first theory is that you just kill Black Widow, but you have Scarlett Johansson ready to go for a Black Widow movie that has already been announced. How are you doing that? There's two ways to do that. A prequel. And the question is it Scarlett Johansson? Or is it a younger Scarlett Johansson lookalike, right? Secondly, you could do a film about people searching for Black Widow and going back in time and using the same quantum realm that Ant-Man has to find her. But then it becomes a movie about men finding a woman. So it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of story they're going to use, because what you can't do is you don't kill Black Widow in Endgame, and then all of a sudden she's alive in the current times and there's no explanation behind it, and then we kind of just go with this. I think they have totally killed the character and the potential of Black Widow in this franchise in particular, and we do have to at some point talk about the tricky situation and the relationship that Marvel has had with women. That last scene in Avengers Endgame, when the Russo brothers and the screenwriters create a moment for women in the film, there was a fear that that might come off as pandering. And I actually think it achieved that with a lot of moviegoers and a lot of critics. They've brought this up, that that's a form of pandering, of just giving in to the fans for a cheap pop. And you're not really advancing the story, because what are you doing with Black Widow then?
Well, I think no matter what you do, people are going to complain. People are going to, you know, say it's not enough. If you apologize, you didn't give them enough, big enough apology. If you acknowledge, you didn't give them enough, big enough acknowledgement. So I pay no attention to that at all, even a little bit. But I also will say that the fans, what do you mean pandering to the fans? What do you mean pandering to the fans? I mean, the fans are what make this. You do it for the fans. So that's
what. But what happens when you pander, Mike, you basically create something unoriginal and uncreative.
But that's not what happened. It was creative and it was original and we hadn't seen it in a Marvel movie. And like we've been talking about, I think it's a precursor to the future. I don't think that there's the Black character and the Latina character hero movie that's coming out. There's a lot of female superhero movies about to hit in the next 3 years.
Right, but we've seen them all. I mean, Catwoman with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Forget that. No, not
was one. I'm talking about Halle Berry. We've seen Elektra. I mean, yes. So it's not like a new thing. It's just that it's never been really championed.
It's never
especially
been done.
In the it contextual time.
It hasn't been done well. Let's call it.
It hasn't been done well. Let's just call it. All right, moving on to the spoiler questions and the last part of our podcast for this special bonus episode of After the Endgame. Loki.
After the Endgame.
This was a question that I have been lingering, but because there's so many bigger sort of commentary on Endgame that it kind of went through the cracks, but I want to retrieve it from the cracks and make it a little bit more salient. If you remember, there was a moment in the scene where the Avengers Endgame version goes back in time to 2012's Avengers timeline. In that timeline, Loki is alive. And what ends up happening is because the old Iron Man and the new Iron Man met or met some Avengers, Loki ends up stealing the Tesseract and disappearing into a warp that who knows where he went, Asgard or some sort of new parallel dimension. But what was never answered is where did he go to and how did he just disappear? And no one answered that question in the film. So is he alive? What's he doing with the Tesseract? Where did he go? And what does this mean?
Well, A, he's definitely alive. B, he's going to be doing some stuff in the future with the Tesseract. C, these are the Easter eggs that they'll be talking about over the summer that have been laid and that we're also going to find a couple things will probably show up in Spider-Man. The connect. You know, again, I think everything being interconnected, one of the great things about watching this Endgame was all the payoff of having been loyal to the franchise when they go back in time and all of that it was always a big payoff. It was saying thank you for hanging in there, I felt.
So, Mike, continuing with some of the spoilers that a lot of people are still asking about, how did Cap end up living? And how did he end up getting old? I don't know if it was necessarily explained. And then at the end, we see an old Captain America handing over the baton to Anthony Mackie, which plays Hawk, and now he's the new Captain America. A lot of people thought Bucky was going to be the new Captain America.
Well, that's kind of how it is in the comics, and depending on which thread and which period in the comics you go with. So I think that's going to be an interesting thing. I think, again, they're smart enough to throw us red herrings and to which I think is a good thing. I mean, if you look at the Avengers trailer, you know, in the Avengers trailer, you see regular Thor. You don't see fat Thor. So you had no idea. And that was just a fake out. That was just to kind of get you to know Thor's in there, but it didn't give away anything. So I think,
by the way, I thought Thor still stayed fat at the end.
He did.
I didn't. Yeah, he stayed fat, didn't he?
Come on, you're not going to lose weight overnight. He's even with the Norse god diet, you know. But I think that's important. I think that you know what's going to happen with Captain America. I did think, you know, if I had quibbles about the film, some of the time travel stuff, you're like, okay, well, wait a minute. If they went back and you know they're all alive in different timelines, I mean, okay. That means anybody who dies, you could just really technically go back, get them and say, hey, don't go left when you should have gone right or bring somebody from the past into the future. So, I mean, if Black Widow's alive, okay, if they make a Black Widow movie, I think you're right. It'll either be a prequel and Scarlett's aged out, or they're going to find a way to show us that we didn't realize there was a little loophole when she went back, blah, blah, blah.
Kind of like Gamora. Look, Gamora came back through time travel, so I'm thinking they're going to apply something similar with Black Widow.
They could, yes.
They could. Like, half of the movie, of the new Black Widow movie, would be searching for her, and then they find her, but instead of finding her at the very end and then her appearing in a second movie, it defeats the purpose, because it's supposed to be about female empowerment and female films. Maybe you find her a quarter of the way into the film, and the next 75% is just her.
Well, you know, I like that finding Black Widow. I like that whole concept. I mean, you know, yeah, there's a number of things they could do to get her. I mean, I feel like it would be, I feel like she never had an origin film. So they're going to have to give her an origin film. And I think that makes the most sense because, you know, all these actors got paid, like Robert Downey Jr. got paid $75 million for Infinity War. So I don't even know what he made for this new one. So that's insane amounts of money. So getting rid of these characters is also makes good economic sense for them as well. So I think your notion about a prequel, because essentially Black Widow is going to be Marvel's version of La Femme Nikita.
That's what she's supposed to be. All right, Mike, thanks for coming on and talking a little Avengers Endgame.
All right, thank you, sir.